Record 29. Threads on the face. Shoots. Unnatural compression. Strange. The barometer is falling, but there's no wind yet, just silence. Up there above, where we can't hear it, it's already begun, the storm. The rain clouds are racing along at full speed. There aren't many of them yet, scattered, serrated fragments, as though some city had fallen up there, and now the pieces of the walls and towers are flying down, and heaps of them grow with horrible rapidity before your eyes, and they come closer and closer, but still have days to fly through blue emptiness before they crash down here to the bottom with us. Down below it's quiet. There are thin, mysterious, almost invisible threads in the air. Every fall they blow in here from over there, beyond the wall. They float slowly. Suddenly you feel you've got something strange that you can't see on your face, and you try to brush it off, but no, you can't. There's no way to get rid of it. These threads are usually numerous if you go near the green wall where I was walking this morning. I-330 had asked me to meet her at the ancient house in our apartment there. I was not far from the red, from the rust-red opaque mass of the ancient house when I heard behind me someone's hurried little steps and rapid breathing. I turned round and saw O trying to catch up with me. There was something special about her person, how rounded and softly full it seemed, her arms and the cups of her breasts and her whole body, which I knew so well, rounded out her yoni and stretched it as though the thin material was going to give at any minute and everything would be outside, in the sun, in the light. It occurred to me that over there in the garden thickets in the springtime, shoots break their way up through the earth just as stubbornly in order to put out branches and leaves as quickly as possible to bloom as soon as they can. She was silent for a few seconds while the blue of her eyes shone in my face. I saw you that time on the day of unanimity. I saw you too. And I had a sudden recollection of her standing down below in the narrow passageway, her back pressed to the wall and her hands shielding her belly. I couldn't help glancing at her belly, round beneath her yoni. She must have noticed this. She became all round and pink and gave me a pink smile. I'm so happy, so happy. I'm full, you see, full up to the brim. I walk about and I hear nothing going on around me. I'm forever listening on the inside myself. I said nothing. There was something on my face. It bothered me. I couldn't manage to brush it away. Then suddenly, her blue eyes still shining, she surprised me by grabbing my hand, and I felt the touch of her lips on my hand. This was the first time in my life this ever happened. This was some kind of ancient caress that I'd never even heard of. I felt such hurt and shame that I jerked my hand back, probably a little too roughly. Listen, you've lost your mind. And not only this, in general, what are you so happy about? Don't tell me you've forgotten about what's going to happen to you. Not right now, maybe, but in a month or two, for sure. She was like a candle that just went out. All the circles that made her up suddenly got lopsided and warped. And as for me, there was an unpleasant, even painful compression in my heart, the kind associated with the sensation of pity. That's all the heart is, an ideal pump, a pump sucking up a liquid. To call that compression, contraction, is a technical absurdity from which it follows how absurd, unnatural, diseased are all these loves and pities and anything else that's supposed to cause this compression. Silence. The cloudy green glass of the wall was on our left, the dark red mass ahead, and these two colours blending together combined in me to produce a resultant, what I considered a brilliant idea. Wait, I know how to save you. I can save you. You won't have to take one look at your baby and then die. You'll be able to feed it. You understand? You'll watch it grow in your arms, grow around and ripe like a fruit. A shudder went through her whole body and she clung to me. You remember that woman, you know, a long time ago on the walk? Okay, listen, she's here now in the ancient house. Let's go to her and I promise I'll settle everything right away. I could already see us, three of us, her, me, and I-330 going down the corridors, taking her to where the flowers and grass and leaves. But she took a step back away from me and the horns of her pink crescent were trembling and turning downward. You're talking about her, she said. About, I was embarrassed for some reason. Of course, I'm talking about her. And you want me to go to that woman? You want me to ask her to... Don't you ever mention her to me again. She bent over and hurried away from me. Then, as if she remembered something else, she turned around and shouted, So I'll die. So what? It's none of your business. What do you care? It's quiet. Pieces of the blue towers and walls keep falling from above and grow before your eyes with horrible swiftness, but they still have hours, maybe even days, to fly through infinity. The invisible threads float slowly past, settle on your face, and you can't brush them off. There's no way to get rid of them. I walk slowly toward the ancient house. In my heart is the absurd, agonizing compression. Record 30. The final number. Galileo's mistake. Wouldn't it be better? Here's the conversation I had with I-330 yesterday in the ancient house amid a colourful riot of reds, greens, bronze yellows, whites and oranges, which jammed any logical train of thought. And all the while, we were beneath the frozen memorial smile of the ancient flat-nosed poet. I reproduce this conversation verbatim because, in my opinion, it is going to have an enormous, decisive meaning for the fate of one state and, what is more, for the universe. And also because you, my unknown readers, might find here something that justifies me. I-330 wasted no time and hit me with everything immediately. I know that you're making the first test flight of the integral day after tomorrow. That's the day we take it over. What? Day after tomorrow? Yes, sit down and don't get excited. We don't have a minute to lose. There were 12 mephi among the hundreds of the guardians seized at random yesterday. If we wait 2 or 3 days, they'll be killed. I didn't say anything. To observe how the test is going, they'll have to send you electricians, mechanics, doctors, meteorologists, and precisely at 1200 hours, remember this, when the bell rings for lunch and everyone flies into the dining room, we'll stay behind in the corridor, lock them in the dining room, and the integral is ours. You understand? It's going to be this way no matter what. The integral in our hands, like a weapon, like that will finish the whole thing at once, quickly, painlessly. Their arrows will be a joke, like midges against a strike. And then, if we need to, we can turn the blast from the engines against them and let them do the work. I jumped up. This is unthinkable. It's stupid. Can't you see that what you're plotting is revolution? Yes, revolution. Why is that stupid? Stupid because there can't be a revolution, because this is me talking, not you. Our revolution was the final one, and there can't be any further revolutions of any kind. Everybody knows that. Her brow makes a sharp, mocking triangle. My dear, you are a mathematician. You're even more, you're a philosopher of mathematics. So do this for me. Tell me the final number. The what? I don't understand. What final number? You know, the last one, the top, the absolute biggest. But I-330, that's stupid, since the number of numbers is infinite. How can there be a final one? And how can there be a final evolution? There is no final one. The number of evolutions is infinite. The last one, that's for children. Infinity frightens children, and it's essential that children get a good night's sleep. But what's the point? What's the point of all this? In the name of the benefactor, what point is there if everyone is already happy? Let's suppose, okay? Good. Let's even suppose that what you say is true. Then what? That's silly. A completely infantile question. Tell something to children. Tell them the whole thing right to the end and they'll still ask, then what? What comes next? Children are the only bold philosophers, and bold philosophers will always be children. So you're right, it's a child's question, just as it should be. Then what? Then nothing. Finished. All through the universe, evenly spread everywhere. Aha, evenly everywhere. That is precisely what we're talking about. Entropy. Physiological entropy. You're a mathematician. Surely you can see that the only differences of temperature, only contrasts in degree of heat, only that makes for life. And if throughout the universe all bodies are equally warm or equally cool, you've got to smash them into each other. So there'll be a fire, explosion, inferno. And we're going to smash them. But I-330, remember, that's just what our ancestors did during the 200 years war. Oh, and they were right. They were 1,000 times right. They made only one mistake. Afterward, they got the notion that they were the final number, something that doesn't exist in nature. Their mistake was the mistake of Galileo. He was right that the Earth revolves around the Sun, but he didn't know that the entire solar system revolves around yet another centre. He didn't know that the real orbit of the real Earth, as opposed to the relative orbit, is by no means some naive circle. And you? And we, for the first time, at least we know there's no final number. Maybe we'll forget this. No, it's even probable that we'll forget it. When we get old, the way everything unavoidably gets old, at which time we too will inevitably go down just as leaves fall from the tree in the autumn, just as the day after tomorrow, you will. But no, darling, not you, because you're with us. You're with us. A hot flashing whirlwind. I'd never seen her like this, and she was all around me. I vanished into her. The last thing she said, looking straight into my eyes, remember now, at 1200. And I said, yes, I remember. She left. I was alone amid the noisy tumult of many voices, blue, red, green, bronze, yellow, orange. Yes, at 1200 hours. And suddenly the crazy feeling of something odd that settled on your face, something that you can't manage to wipe away. Suddenly, I recall yesterday morning, you, and what she was shouting in I-330's face. Why? How absurd. I rushed to get outside and home as soon as I could. Home. From somewhere behind me, I heard the piercing squeal of the blinds above the wall, and ahead, in the light of the setting sun, crystallised crimson fire, were the globes of the cupolas, huge flaming cubes of buildings, the spire of the accumulator tower, the frozen lightning in the sky, and all that unimpeachable geometrical beauty. I was with my own hands going to... I couldn't believe there was no way out, no other path. I go past some auditorium, don't remember the number. Inside, benches have been piled up. In the middle, a table's covered with sheets of snow-white glass. On the white, the sunlight leaves a spot of blood. Hiding in all this is some kind of tomorrow, unknown and therefore terrifying. This is against nature. For a thinking, sighted creature to live among irregularities, unknowns, X's. Suppose they blindfolded you and forced you to walk by feeling your way along, stumbling and knowing that right there, inches away, was the edge. Just one step, and all that's left of you is a piece of flattened dead meat. Instead, isn't that just what I'm doing? And what if you don't wait? You just dive over the edge yourself. Wouldn't that be the only right thing to do? The one that would solve everything?